It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Good afternoon in New York time, and good day everywhere else. This is a live call-in show. You have the number 1-888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And you could also reach me anytime during the week at info@realmeals.org. So what do we do on this show? We talk about food. We talk about how it impacts our health, the environment, all life on Earth, and how yummy and delicious, healthy, planet-friendly eating can be, and how easy it is. And all I want to do is inspire you. Inspire your meals. And we're going to do that today with Alan Rodinger. He is a chef and an author of a cookbook. We've had him on before. I'll tell you a little bit about him. He's been a private chef to the stars for 28 years, serving clients in the United States, Europe, and Australia. Raised in Mexico City, he acquired a taste for exotic food and culture all early on, a passion for flavor and beauty that drives his culinary expression. He has cooked in private homes, catered parties, and provided specialty desserts for a broad spectrum of high-profile clients, from entertainers to presidents. A world traveler, he absorbed elements from many cuisines to synthesize a unique creative style of his own. Throughout his years as a private chef, Alan developed a reputation for working within the limitations of restricted diets to create delicious food tailored to the specific tastes of each person. His first cookbook, Omega 3 Cuisine, showcases his ability to bring health and flavor together, offering a wide range of dishes that are simultaneously exotic and accessible to the home cook. And his new book is Speed Vegan. Alan, welcome.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
Very good. How are you doing today?
Fabulous.
So the last time we had you on, it was kind of at the last moment, and now I wanted to have an opportunity to talk a lot more with you because you seem to have a lot of delicious, quick tips for food.
It's what I do.
It's what you do. Now, the title, Speed Vegan, interestingly or not, I've been talking to a number of people that have cookbooks out with titles to entice the reader that they can make food quickly. What's this about?
Well, it's catering to people that, you know, are busy or they work late and they come home and they want to make something good, but you don't want to go out and eat at a fast food restaurant or any restaurant, really. Sometimes you just want to stay at home. But they are challenged by, the notion that you got to cook something good, and it takes some time to do it. And this book is it helps people understand how they can prepare better to be ready for this, or just help people cook quickly.
You know, the key word there is prepare. Because I think that's the most important part in preparing a meal quickly. You want to have all the tools you need on hand, clean and ready to go. You want to have a space that's clean and ready to go, and you want to have all of the ingredients, or a lot of inspiring ingredients.
That's right.
Sometimes I want to divide people up into two categories, those that like to cook and know what to do, and those that, well, maybe there's more than two categories, but
about 6 billion, I think.
Yeah, well, there are some that are uncomfortable in the kitchen and don't have a clue of what to do. Some aren't interested. Some might be interested but still don't have a clue. And I think more often than not, that's where these books really come in handy. And so one of the good things that you do in the beginning of your book is you explain all the tools that people might need and the ingredients that they might need. And I've seen more and more cookbooks do this, and I think it's really important. But I don't know how people read cookbooks, because most of the time, if you get one, at least the way I used to read them was I would just like flip through it and then, you know, find something that looked interesting. But I think it's really important to read this book, to read it from the beginning.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I did write it from the beginning and I put a lot of energy into it. But I think you're right. I mean, a lot of people, especially people are time pressured, they'll flip through a book maybe in the bookstore and they'll see, oh, that looks good. And then maybe they'll look another page and they'll see another page and they'll see, well, there's several here that look interesting to me. Maybe I'll buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't read it from the beginning. And that's okay. You know, I'm not egocentric about this. I'm not, you know, if they don't want to read it, that's fine, as long as they buy it. But I think that what would really help people to understand is that you don't just start in the middle in your
mm-hmm.
life. Everything leads up to where you are. And if you want to be enjoying any art or any endeavor, really, it helps to have some background. It helps to have some practice. It helps to have some information. And in terms of cooking, it helps to have some things done ahead so that you're not starting from scratch each time, especially if you're limited in time. And that's why I gave, you know, some what I call quick starts, some things that you can have in your refrigerator or pantry ready to go so that you don't have to start from scratch. You may have a salad dressing, or you may have some roasted garlic puree or something to add to give it an extra boost of flavor that's not out of a can, that you actually had something to do with from beginning to end. And that doesn't take a long time to prepare, but you have it on hand, so when you go to your kitchen, you're already ahead of the game, and that helps.
It does help. But, you know, you made a really good point, and I like that you compare it with other art forms, because cooking can be an art, and that shouldn't intimidate anybody from delving or dabbling with it. You know, we all need to eat, but it's just like everything we do in life. I think the more organized we are, the more successful we can be, except I'm just thinking about some phrase I heard decades ago about disorganization is a sign of a genius.
Well, it can be, but a lot of times geniuses are dysfunctional in other areas
of their
lives.
And they can't cook.
Yeah, they can't cook.
Everyone
can cook. Cooking is really not, I think, if the one thing I would love to be able to do before I'm dead is to demystify this whole cooking business. It's the most ancient activity of civilized human beings. When they first stopped, you know, when they first started making things, I guess the first thing they did was make tools, like weapons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
First things, among the oldest things you find are arrowheads and spear points, stone knives. And right alongside them you find clay pots. And those clay pots are for cooking, for taking something that you're going to eat and trying to make it taste better to you, make it interesting and enticing. That's very simple. It's not... You know, you don't have to be a celebrity chef, you know, unless you're going to dedicate your life to cooking, you know, you're not going to be. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be able to go into your kitchen, which everybody has, almost everybody, and come up with something that thrills you. There's no reason why you shouldn't. And my goal is to make it as easy and as demystified as possible so that people can go, oh, I can do that. And it shouldn't be that hard. And I mean, what you were talking about at the beginning of the show, I was thinking, well, you know, everything is intimidating at the beginning. I mean, think about it when you're a teenager and you see a girl, or if you're a girl, you see a guy and you don't want to talk to them. You know, it's very intimidating. But as soon as you jump in, you find that it's actually quite enjoyable.
Well, I think most things that we get the most satisfaction from are the ones we've invested in.
That's right. And the things that we love the most.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned clay pots, and I just want to say, I don't know if it's something deep in my DNA from some former life, but whenever I see a menu with, like in a Chinese restaurant or something, that offers a clay pot dish, it always entices me. I just love the idea of something made in a clay pot.
Well, also the tools. I mean, like I have a stone mortar from Thailand. It's a fabulous thing. It's made of stone and has a pestle made out of coconut wood, a palm tree wood, and it makes an incredible sound when you're pounding. And it harkens back to the very beginning of cooking, when people really used a stone indentation and they beat the food to a pulp with a piece of wood or another stone. And there's something so incredibly satisfying for me. to use a tool that has remained virtually unchanged since the beginning of cooking?
You know, I think you mentioned that, you know, people have a hard time in the kitchen, and I don't know what's gotten us so far away from the kitchen, but I too, like
I
you,
want
to, well, yeah, McDonald's and fast food and this whole lifestyle. But I too want to get people back in the kitchen and demystify the kitchen. So we're on that path together, and I'm glad that you're there making these great recipes. But we need to get people back in the kitchen for so many reasons. It's healthier. It can be less expensive. You can bring your family together. There's more community and warmth and just so many reasons. And it can be good for the environment because you can choose all the right healthy foods. You don't know what's going into the food that you're eating at fast food restaurants and most restaurants.
Unfortunately, I do know what's going in there because I worked a long time ago. And you don't want to know what's going in there. Some of it's not planned.
Yeah, I liked what you had said in the beginning of your book when you're talking about some of the ingredients to get. And I really believe in getting high quality ingredients because the flavors are so much better. And you talked about vanilla and your experience working at a billionaire's club or something.
Yeah, the Sherwood Country Club in California.
Yeah, that was really funny where you had the purchasing agent taste the high-quality Tahitian vanilla.
Well, he didn't believe me. He really didn't believe me. He thought, well, what difference does it make? You're just making a cake. It's just one ingredient. So what is it? You know, this one's much cheaper. And I went out. He didn't have any and wouldn't order any, so I went out and got some Tahitian vanilla extract, and I poured it in a little shot glass, just, you know, about a teaspoon. And then I poured some of that awful stuff that was imitation vanilla in the other one. And I said, you know, sniff. And he goes, that smells good. Okay, taste it. So he tasted the Tahitian vanilla extract, which was incredible. Floral. I mean, it's just like you get the feeling that it's coming from a plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, okay, now shoot the other one. And he actually spat it. It was like, yuck. And I said, okay, so which one are you going to order? He said, I'll order that one. And it was just, boom. I didn't have to give him any kind of intellectual rap. It was a taste thing. He immediately got it.
You know, I never thought about this before. Well, maybe I have, but it's a really good point, and I would like to encourage people, especially those that want to save money and think buying the less expensive of something might be a better thing. I suggest buying both of them, bring them home, and doing a taste test and seeing if there really are quality differences in more expensive items or not. And if there are, then you'll know, and you can choose with wisdom, or if the lesser expense, if the cheaper item tastes just as fine, well, then you can feel good that you've made a wise economical decision. But I think many times there are significant quality differences in different brands. When I buy cocoa, I did this by accident once, but I had several different brands of cocoa, and I just sniffed them. And
the sniff test is good.
Oh my God, one of them was just so delicious and intoxicating, and then the other ones just were bland.
Yeah. Well, even like, for example, pepper, black pepper, if you freshly grind a peppercorn, you get a really rich aroma. If you open a can of that pre-ground stuff, it actually smells kind of bad. It smells flat, it smells oxidized, and sometimes you can even smell toxic.
Right.
And then it's a question of, well, which one do you want to eat? You know, which one is going to delight your palate, you know?
Exactly. Well,
delighting your palate is important, too. I mean, it's not just fun, which is certainly enough, but it's how your body's going to receive it. And it tells you, I mean, this is the reason we have senses.
Taste buds.
And olfactory senses. I mean, this is what originally tells animals what is good to eat and what is good for them at a particular time. I mean, you notice when dogs are sick, sometimes they'll go out and start chewing things to make themselves throw up. They're picking things that are going to make them sick because they need to get it out of their stomach. And this is how we choose what's good for us.
I want to talk about nuts for a minute.
Okay.
This drives me nuts. Something you said just triggered this, but I don't like nuts that are old and rancid.
Yeah,
but the thing is, I think many people don't even know anymore when they're eating a rancid nut. They just eat it. because they're used to eating rancid nuts. I was flying in business class not too long ago, and they served warm roasted salted nuts. Now, I don't usually eat roasted or salted nuts. I like raw nuts. But I just tasted one of them, and in my mind I thought, rancid. They weren't good.
Well, when your mind says rancid, it's way past rancid.
No, but I...
Usually you should take a minute or two before you go, that didn't taste very good.
Yeah, I'm very sensitive, especially about nuts. And the problem is I think more and more people are getting used to lesser and lesser quality food, and they don't even know what's bad for them, which is very sad.
Yeah, well, the environment is degraded. We're not even when you get things that aren't rancid, a lot of times because of the way they're grown and the environment they're grown in, they don't have the nutrients that they used to have in the old days. They don't have the flavor they used to have. So people are just not really paying attention. They're just kind of eating, and most people have become accustomed to going after the fat, the salt, and the sugar.
Mm-hmm. Paying attention. Very important keywords there, paying attention.
Well, yeah, I mean, and not just for food. I mean, I think consciousness is what that means. You know, being conscious, being aware, that is the way that you enjoy your life. If you're not paying attention, you're missing it. I mean, not just what you eat, but everything.
Okay, we're going to jump around for this hour, which I'm really enjoying. No, it's good. What okay. I kind of want to do. I like bouncing off.
I jump.
How high?
You say.
But speaking on nuts, I wanted to just jump over to your hazelnut dip in your Speed Vegan cookbook.
Yeah, I just did that at Summerfest.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did. It was part of my demo.
And it was super yummy.
They loved it.
Yeah. So the idea is that using nuts and raw nuts, you can do so many different wonderful things with them, and people just don't give nuts a chance or enough.
That's what I said. Just give me a chance.
So this is a wonderful recipe. I'm just going to quickly read through. It's got hazelnuts, tomato, parsley leaves, sherry vinegar, olive oil, flax oil, garlic, hot paprika, agave, cayenne pepper, a little salt. And you end up blending all of that together, and...
You soak the nuts first.
Yes.
Yeah.
Soaking is a wonderful thing with nuts because it brings out all the good things and kind of disengages the bad things.
It also enables you to make more of a palatable puree if you're trying to do that kind of a thing. I mean, if you want crunchy, then soaking is not going to be what you want to do.
Right.
But if you want to manipulate it in some way, soaking really helps. And it also makes it more digestible.
But this isn't a difficult thing to do, and... In the old days, when I was a kid, when we would have a party, it was that onion soup mix and sour cream with potato chips.
It was always there.
It was always there, and thinking back on it, all I can think of is salt. It was just flavored salt.
Yeah, and then you dip potato chips in it.
In more salt.
Yeah. You've read that book, haven't you? The End of Our Eating.
Oh no.
I recommend it highly. It's David Kessler, the former head of the FDA, and he just basically explains what the food industry is doing to us.
Other than killing us.
When they say, you know, you bet you can't eat one, it's not a bet.
Right.
They know you can't eat one because they've manipulated fat, salt, and sugar to get you to what they call, they reach the point they call the bliss point in the brain, where the combination of fat, salt, and sugar manipulated just right will trigger this reaction in your brain, which makes you want more and more and more and more. And they did an experiment on rats, and they found that rats will return often enough, I mean, as often as they need to get this bliss point from fat, salt, and sugar. And the only, second only to cocaine, they will do as much as they have to do to get it. Second only to cocaine. Poor rats.
That says a lot right there.
I'm telling you.
About
and it's, they're setting us up, and this is why you want to avoid processed food, because they have
to cocaine. That's why.
Well, in fact, I saw somebody recently, I remember, wasn't it Gene Jack Wang or somebody who's worked for the government? He said, we're making food more like cocaine now. And he was talking about the manipulation of fats.
Okay. Well,
okay, moving right along.
So back to the good fats, those wonderful raw nuts that you can do so much with, and it's so easy, especially if you have a well-organized, prepared kitchen, because you're going to have all of these items ready to go. And then when you're having a party or you're going to a potluck or it's something very simple, you just blend it all up and cut up some celery sticks and carrots, and you're off and running, and people are going to dip into this and just you're going to see their eyebrows going up and down. There, what is this?
Unusual.
But delicious and fabulous.
That's right. Yeah. Well, there are two things. I mean, the palate loves the unusual.
Mm-hmm.
So even an unusual combination, an unusual texture, an unusual flavor, it's thrilling to the palate. It's like, oh, wow, I haven't tried this before, and it's good. It's food. I could eat it. And and this is why people go out to a restaurant to try a different restaurant, to try a different chef, because they want their palate to be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it. All you have to do is figure out ways to combine different things and start learning about what works well with something else. And then stretch the envelope. What if I did this to it? What if I did that to it? And it doesn't take a great chef to do this. Anybody can do it. You just have to be bold and go try something new. And that's why I give people a whole bunch of different exotic ingredients that they can go out and start collecting and have in their kitchen so that they can play with it. When they have time, just start enjoying the process of combining food, combining flavors.
So the idea is easy, healthy, fast.
Happy.
So
let's not forget the whole point of everything.
Is for us
joy.
To be joyful.
Yeah, joy. You know,
to experience joy.
Exactly.
We are here to experience joy.
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here to experience joy. And I have the answers
for you. It should not be
news
to anyone.
Well, you know, I don't think so. I don't think a lot of people know that.
No, actually, on the contrary, I think they know it, but they don't believe that it's that simple. They think that they're somehow they have to pass a test, or that they have to, you know, be good enough for something, to get a job, you do. But to be a successful human being, all you have to do is enjoy your life.
Thoreau said the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation, and I believe most people do, unfortunately. But yeah, it's really simple. All you have to do is have a good time, enjoy your life.
I mean, if you want to be the best at what you do, yes, you have to have some experience, you have to have some, you know, some training sometimes. You have to be good at it, and that's when you get paid the big bucks, et cetera, et cetera. But there's probably, you know, 99% of the population of the world that is not going to be that person. They're just trying to live their life. They're just trying to survive. But what they want is the same thing that the guy who's the best of the best wants. They want to feel joy.
Okay, back to the tools. Back to food and the tools and the ingredients. You know, because your list in front of the book is really helpful. It's really useful. And if people can stock their kitchens with all of this stuff, they'll be great. But I want to add a but to that, because
always with the butts.
Yeah, well, you can really do a lot with a little. And you can probably do a lot of these recipes without having all of the things that are suggested, even though it would be a great thing. And what do I mean by that? I was just in Buenos Aires.
Nice.
And we rented an apartment that came with a kitchen. Unfortunately, this kitchen was not well stocked. It didn't have many pots and pans and utensils, which was kind of disappointing. But still, I bought just a handful of things for the few days we were going to be there, and every day I made something completely different. It doesn't take a lot. I just had lentils and rice and onions, and I did like 20 different things with them.
Yeah, just one little ingredient will throw it in a different direction.
Yes. And with
chili or something.
Yeah, with one pot. It says that you've traveled a lot, and I don't know what kind of traveling or what kind of accommodations, but I know that
all of them.
I've traveled sometimes in very small spaces and still managed, I was able to cook sometimes if I had a hot pot or a studio, one of those little kitchenette things. It's amazing what wonderful meals you can make with very little space.
And you can serve it raw. It doesn't have to be cooked. I mean, there's so many things you can make just by cutting and combining.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need a little bowl or something and a knife maybe or a pair of hands to tear.
Now, another thing I want to talk about that I think is important is the presentation of the food.
Mm, yeah.
And we have a few nice color pictures in your book in the middle.
Thank you.
That shows what some of these things can look like. But presentation is really important. And I think more and more people that are in this fast food lifestyle are used to their food
thrown at them.
Thrown in a piece of paper or
yeah.
in plastic. And I've been thinking about this a lot in the last week because I recently went to a new vegan fast food restaurant in Manhattan. And I was so happy that it was there because every time a new vegetarian vegan restaurant opens up, I think there are bells ringing in heaven. I think it's a wonderful thing to rejoice. And yet I went there and I was really frustrated and disappointed because it was fast food. The salad was served in a plastic container, and there was something in me that really was unhappy.
Something there is that doesn't love plastic.
I like my food on a plate.
Yeah, in a calm environment.
In a calm environment. Yeah. And I've been thinking about that a lot, about the whole fast food concept. Not only is it fast, It's not food, and it's served in all of this paper that you're going to unwrap really quickly and throw away. The lifespan of that stuff is so short-lived.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Ours is short-lived enough. I mean, if you think about it, you know, we really don't have a whole lot of time. It seems like, you know, people talk, well, I got to kill some time. Oh, for God's sake, don't kill it.
Yes, I always correct people.
It.
I correct
use
people
it.
When they say that, don't kill time.
And we're, this society, we spend, as Americans, we spend the least amount of our disposable or our income on food and the least amount of our time on eating it. How insane is that? When food is, you know, you need food, water, air, and love. If you have those ingredients, you can survive. If you don't, you wither. So wouldn't it be wise to make sure that what you're putting into your body is both good for you and enjoyable since you're spending so much of your time on it?
I think so. I remember reading John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods. I think he had said that we spend about 8% of our income on food, whereas Europeans spend about 12%. And but, you know, there's a lot.
And third worlders, they spend, you know, up to 80%.
Right.
Because they really don't have enough money for anything else.
But we spend a lot of money in taxes that support subsidies, that support the wrong
foods. Kinds of food.
And I don't know if that goes into the equation. But we're going to talk more about this. Alan, don't go away. Everybody else, don't go away. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Radio Network celebrating 5 years of independent news.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hello, this is Eric Ochsner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz. Every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hi, you're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
The Progressive Radio Network, your premier progressive radio station.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. It's all about food. If you have any comments and questions, you can call 1-888-874-4888. Right. Alan Rottinger.
That's me.
You're with us today, and we're talking about your book, Speed Vegan, and all things yummy and plant-based. So your biography talks about how you prepared food for celebrities and presidents.
And you know what?
Yes.
They're just people.
I know, but what presidents did you make food for?
Well, I didn't cook at the White House, but I did get to cook for President Clinton when he was a house guest at the home of somebody I worked for.
Did you make any food for Chelsea?
She wasn't there.
Oh.
No, he was on his own there.
Well, I'm not much into the celebrity news, but there is a little buzz about Chelsea getting married. I don't know if you're up on it.
I don't want to sound callous, but I really don't care because I don't know Chelsea.
Okay, I don't know either, but there was an article yesterday that came by me because I get all these articles about vegan, and it's called My Big Fat Vegan Wedding. So apparently she's vegan, and apparently she's having...
Oh, really? Well, now I'm caring a little bit.
Well, I knew she was vegetarian, but now...
All I need is a little connection, and all of a sudden I'm in love with people.
Well, apparently she's vegan now, and apparently her wedding's going to be mostly vegan, although I read that there might be there's going to be some organic beef there for some of the crowd.
Her dad, no doubt.
And she's having a gluten-free wedding cake.
How nice.
Yeah, so I thought that was all very lovely.
Yeah, well, it's starting to grow. I think it's sad that we have to wait for a celebrity like Alicia Silverstone or somebody to bring it into the news. But
yes.
I think it's starting to take hold. People are starting to realize that first of all, you feel a lot better,
right?
And it's not just your digestion and your general health. You feel a lot better about where your food comes from. I never would have thought this because I've killed lobsters by stabbing them between the eyes because that was supposedly the fastest, most painless way. But I always had to overcome a little something inside of me before I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like I had any great, love and affection for this crustacean that was trying to pinch me, It's just that there's something inside of me that does not want to kill anything.
Yeah.
And, even a bug, you crush it, you think, oh, I just killed something, yeah. I think about that now.
When I was a kid, I didn't think about it, but now I think about it.
And it's great not to have to.
Absolutely.
It's a liberating thing to know that, well, at least I'm not killing anything. At least I'm not contributing to the madness.
Now, you were at Summerfest earlier this month.
I was. It was really fun.
You want to tell us something about this year's event, some of the highlights other than
food? I was busy a good part of the time preparing for my demo because, you go on to make something, it takes, 30 minutes to make, but you got to make it enough for up to 100 people, and so you got to prepare. But I did catch a couple of the lectures. Dr. Neil Bernard gave a presentation about what he called the Three Sisters, which is fascinating. Practice from the Native Americans where they would build mounds or plant mounds with each mound would have corn and beans. The corn would provide the bean pole for the beans to grow up, and the beans in turn would provide nitrogen, fixed nitrogen in the soil for the corn, and then squash. And squash would spread big, wide leaves and shade so that, weeds wouldn't grow. And it was a really cool thing. And then he was proposing that for Thanksgiving, maybe we would consider a Three Sisters way of celebrating rather than a dead turkey way of celebrating. And I've been experimenting with the Three Sisters in different stews and soups and things, and it's really fun. And I also was there.
I just want to make an aside that Dr. Neil Barnard will be on this show in a few weeks.
Good
Stay
for him
tuned.
And good for you. Mm-hmm. I want to tune in. He's a really, really interesting guy and a great speaker.
Yeah.
And also Gene Bauer, who gave me a nice endorsement on my book, Farm Sanctuary, did a beautiful presentation about Farm Sanctuary and protecting animals from...
Yeah, they're doing wonderful things. I recently saw one of the videos that they put out, which was a little difficult to watch, but it had to do with the dairy business.
Yeah, but you know, he did this presentation and he apologized. He said, you know, I'm sorry, I have to show you a couple of, you know, ugly pictures, but there were only be like one picture, and it was always in black and white of an animal in a form of suffering. And then he would show the color picture of that animal after it had been adopted and rescued and brought to his farm and allowed to flourish. And you see, like, pigs with an actual smile on their face.
Yeah.
And gigantic, beautiful, glistening, you know, cows. I mean, just beautifully. You can't imagine that they ever had a bad day in their life. And then you, after seeing, a black and white of them lying on the floor of a slaughterhouse, like, they thought it was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And he adopted it. And, you know, they let him take it away because they figured it was just dead. And nursing it back to health, and then you see this animal, and it's just in its real animal-ness, you know, the way it's supposed to live.
Right, and then you think of the $60 billion that go the other way every year.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the point that I got from him was that's the starting point, because that's where we are, and his option is really the ending point. I mean, you can't get away from the fact that this is happening. It's happening, and we know it's happening. But there is an alternative, and he's providing it, which is really a very upbeat, positive note. I think, you know, rather than just focus on, which you need sometimes, and, PETA with their ads, one of my favorites is this woman holding the fox without its skin, and she says, here's the rest of your fur coat, you know. And it's shocking, you know.
Yeah, people don't think that way at all.
And people don't like to see it. And there's some things that they do which I go, okay, that's a little gross. But I respect the fact that they're putting out that other side of the message, which is that if you really feel good about this, this is what it is. You know, and if you can't handle this is what it is. So make a decision.
So
and
I
think there's something about that. But the cool thing is what the alternative is.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Because there is an alternative. It's not just like, well, you know, what do we do? There is something you can do.
Well, it's double-sided because we shouldn't be inseminating all of these animals to make so many more of themselves that we're going to confine in small spaces. But what we do want is to have all of these species in a natural environment where they can procreate naturally and grow and have a lovely life.
Yeah, and there's an argument against that because they're farm animals. And they've kind of co-developed with us because they wouldn't exist if it wasn't for human beings. There aren't wild lambs.
Right.
They're all wild pigs, but they're a different kind of animal. So who knows? I mean, I think that what would happen is they would slowly go out of existence.
Right.
Which would be fine because there's no reason for them to exist if the only purpose of it is suffering.
So the North American Vegetarian Society has an annual event, and it's called Summerfest, and it usually takes place at the beginning of July in a little town called Johnsonville?
Johnstown.
Johnstown, just outside of Pittsburgh. And it's a five-day event, I think?
Yeah, I only was there for three of the days.
And most of it takes place over the weekend, and there are many, many different speakers. A lot of them have talked simultaneously. There's lots of different things going on.
Yeah, that was a sad part.
There's more and more events for children because there are more vegetarian children now than there have been. And it's just a great place, especially if you're new to this whole way of eating, for to immerse yourself in it. The food's always great. Is Chef Ken Berger? It wasn't great. Is Chef Ken Bergeron doing the food still in the cafeteria?
I didn't actually meet the chef.
Okay.
Well, you know, the first thing I want to mention is that I met some of the most thoughtful, intelligent, very, very kind people that you see a lot of them all together. And you don't meet anybody that's objectionable or, you know, on a bummer. Sometimes you meet some people in the world that, you know, maybe they're vegetarian, but they're not upbeat about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's other things. But these people, going to these lectures, trying to learn more, and I learned a lot. I mean, I was approaching the vegan thing just from diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that it's actually there are people there that, you know, they won't wear leather, they won't, you know, they have great concern about pharmaceutical medicines that they have to take because
yeah.
they know that they've been tested on animals. And I'm going, wow, I never thought of that.
I'm one of those crazy people.
Well, no, it's nothing crazy about it. I think you're trying to do the right thing for yourself and others, and there's nothing crazy about that. And it because it comes not from angst, it comes from a sincere desire to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fabulous. I don't know the answer for that, because if you're sick and you know there's a drug that's going to make you well,
I a few years ago I was treated for ovarian cancer, and it was quite an old ordeal, and I'm happy to say that I'm way past it. But during my time in surgery and chemotherapy, they use a lot of heparin, which they put through the needles to keep things clear and keep, I guess, the blood from clogging things up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's from pigs, and I didn't know that until after the fact, and there probably wouldn't have been anything I could have done about it, but I was not happy to find out about it.
It's a sick world, you know. It's a sick world.
Okay, back to yummy food.
There are also veterinarians who help pigs.
Yes.
So it does sort of balance out.
Yes. Yes. Let's go to your dessert section of Speed Vegan.
The sweet stuff, shall we?
Okay, let's run to Aztec hot chocolate. Now, one of the things I like about this is a hot chocolate recipe that doesn't have milk. It's made with water. And I don't know how many people have experienced this, but during different times of my life, maybe when I was in college or maybe when I wasn't so organized or whenever I ran out of milk, be it dairy milk, which I don't eat anymore, or soy milk or whatever, but I had a craving for hot chocolate, I would make it with water. And it was fine.
Well, not only is it fine, that was the original hot chocolate.
Well, that's what I read here in the book. I didn't know that.
Well, they didn't have any farm animals in Mexico until the Spaniards came.
Mm-hmm.
They had never seen a cow. They didn't have any, they didn't have goats. They didn't have any of the stuff. It all came with the Europeans.
Yeah, so cocoa powder, a little agave, cinnamon, and the secret ingredient, hot red chili powder.
Not secret anymore. Thanks, Karen.
Mix that all up with water, and you have one divine cup of
it's true.
Hot chocolate.
Yeah, and they have this little tool that they use in Mexico. It's like a one of those things that's carved out of one piece of wood. It's got little rings and little sprockety kind of things, and they use that like a whisk. For frothing the chocolate.
I'm going to have to pick one up next time I'm in Mexico.
Yeah, you see it in the markets. Hmm. Made out of wood, it's got, you know, carvings, little niche notches, and then little rings that are kind of separated from the main thing.
Now, the next dessert I want to talk about is right next to the Aztec hot chocolate, actually, and it's the chocolate pot de crème.
Uh-huh.
Well, how would you say that?
Pot de crème.
How would you say that in English?
Pot
de crème. Okay.
J'ai
un problème avec ça. Mais c'est le chocolat, c'est le pot de crème chocolat. Okay.
Pot de crème au chocolat.
It's very good. That's what it is. And it's a delicious recipe with coconut milk, chocolate, and more secret ingredients. Like
you can reveal them.
Basil. And orange zest, and that wonderful Tahitian vanilla extract, and black peppercorns. Now, what's
the
difference?
You can use black peppercorns, or you can use Comet's Tail peppercorns, which are really kind of hard to find. You have to go to, you can go to, I think it's called Big Tree Pantry or something like .com. The online source is in the book. It's a Balinese peppercorn that has a little tail on it, and it's not as spicy as a black peppercorn, but it has a really wonderful floral kind of taste to it. Really wonderful. It's supposed to be an aphrodisiac, too.
Well, we're growing a lot of things on our balcony in my New York City apartment, and I've got a tremendous amount of basil, and I was thinking of making a little Thai vegetable green curry thing tonight, but now I'm thinking I might add a little chocolat peau de crème because it has a half a cup of basil leaves in it, and that would be another fascinating use of my basil.
Yeah.
I can't
wait. Well, you know, the interesting thing is if you serve it to somebody and they don't know what's in it, they'll start to say, oh, would you put mint in this? No.
Mm-hmm.
Did you put, no. What about it? No. And they'll never guess it. And then finally you say, well, they'll say, what is it? It's basil. They go, oh, duh. Yeah, that's what it is. Because they never imagined that you'd put it in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I'm going to like it.
It's subtle, but it's definitely there.
Right.
I just served this the other night to a friend.
And did he say what's in there? She.
Well, she was actually there, I think. No, actually, I don't think she was, but I did tell her.
Mm-hmm.
She knew.
Basil is a great thing. And then the last dessert I want to mention is actually on the very next page, interestingly, not intentionally to me, but it's the mangoes and lychees with mint. And mint, in my book, doesn't get enough press. Every time I have mint in something, I go nuts.
It's a julep.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, once you start with the julep, you don't go no further. No, but mint is a fabulous thing to put in your food. I mean, the to make a chutney with it, mint and coriander, or mint with, I mean, there's so many things you can use it with.
I love it when it's in a green salad.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I've had it in a simple sliced cut oranges in mint.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing how
strawberries with mint,
how it just turns it into a dish.
Yeah, totally.
It's not just fruit anymore. So you have this mangoes with lychee with mint, and it's a little more complicated because you're making a sugar syrup with it.
Yeah, and I use, I don't remember what, I think I may have used palm sugar. I don't remember.
It says here brown sugar.
Oh, brown sugar, yeah.
Lime juice, grated ginger, mint leaves.
Yep.
And then.
Yeah, it's basically, it's very quick, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you use lychees, unless you buy them fresh, you're going to get them out of a can, and they have a little bit of that sugary syrup, and you pour most of it off, and you save just a little bit to make the caramel. And it's very quick. You just heat the caramel up in the pan. You have some mango cubes. You know, cut them up into cubes. Stir them in there. And then as soon as the caramel kind of goes, and then you have to let it loosen again. As soon as it starts to flow again, you throw in the lychees. Stir it around. Throw in the ginger. Stir it around. Take it off the heat. Put it in plates. Sprinkle with mint. Yum. Lime juice.
Mm. Yum. Well,
lime juice and mangoes.
Yum.
They're like, you know, made in heaven.
Well, it's like that song, put the lime in the coconut.
So lime in the mango.
It's lime and mango, lime and garlic, lime and cilantro. I just love lime.
Lime and tequila, lime and...
But this recipe, mangoes and lychees with mint, you could really do that with a number of different fruits. And then a little lime, ginger, mint syrup.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really good. Really good. Well,
my goal is to start you off on things, not end it. So please,
yes,
spring out and do new things.
What new
whatever gives you whatever gives you pleasure.
What new things are you working on?
Well, I that day the night when my friend was here, I had to keep up with a new dessert because we have these incredible organic apricots that are available right down the street from me, and so I took I made a trio of desserts. I made a very spicy chocolate truffle. Mm. With that from my first cookbook, Omega 3 Cuisine. There's the recipes in there, and you go to my website. The recipes there, but it's not made with cream. It's made with water and with Udo's oil, which is an oil blend that includes flax oil. Gives you your omega 3s, and that was one thing. And then the chocolate buttercream, and then pot de crème.
Pot de crème.
And,
oui.
Pot de crème. Oui. And then for the third one, I took the apricots and cut them into quarters, and then broke the seed and took out the apricot kernels and chopped them lightly and toasted them just a little bit, and then took some cocoa nibs, and then I made a syrup with palm sugar and lime juice.
Hmm.
Oh, I mean, I'm sorry, amaretto. It's an amaretto. Because that would, because you call the apricot kernels are bitter, slightly
mm-hmm.
bitter. And so the amaretto kind of gives it a little sweetness, but it's still kind of a bitter. And then just made a syrup, and then just threw the apricots quartered in there and just tossed them around just until they began to wilt, and put them in little dishes with the syrup, and then put the cocoa nibs and apricot kernels.
Yeah.
It was really, really delicious.
Well, that's
always something new.
That's a great thing about fruit, which doesn't get enough press. Fresh fruit on its own is great, but it doesn't take much with fruit to make a really stunning dessert. That's simple and relatively healthy. Just I like sometimes at a barbecue or a picnic to barbecue, make little skewers of different chunks of fruit with a simple little marinade. Delicious.
Yep. Well, fruit itself is a celebration of life, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean it's the part of the plant that's getting ready to become a new tree. So it's got everything in it.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, that's where the seeds are.
Mm-hmm.
After the flower comes the fruit.
Another thing I like about fruit, this is the ode to the fruit, but the great thing is it comes in its own packaging. And I was doing this rant earlier before about fast food and how I'm really troubled with all the packaging. And fruit, think about it. Most fruit comes with its own package. You take an apple, you put it in your bag, you're good to go. Orange is the same. Bananas, for the most part, you got to make sure they're not squished. One of my favorite foods to go is papaya. Because when you're ready, you just cut it open and scoop it out, and you've got a meal.
Yeah, you use a spoon. You don't have to cut it or anything. Just cut it in half.
Yeah, well, you could use the back of the spoon to cut it open if it's ripe and just scoop out the seeds.
You've got a good grip. You can just, like, split it.
You
know, I'll tell you, my recent experience with this, you know, prepackaged thing, my wife and I went up to, we live kind of right next to the forest, so we went on a hike last night, and we went up to this, our favorite wild raspberry patch, and there were still some that the bears hadn't gotten, and they were so juicy and ripe. It was the most amazing handful of raspberries I've ever had. It's just so delicious. And that's, I mean, you can't get any better than that. You ever eat a strawberry right off the vine when it was still warm from
yes,
the sun?
Yes. And I mean,
there's nothing like it. There's nothing
like
it.
And I love picking berries that are growing wild.
Mm.
And in fact, I grew up with blackberries that grew wild behind our home before they dug them all up to build more houses. And so for a long time, it was hard to actually buy berries. Because to me, that was something that always just grew, and you could just have them.
Yeah.
But it's not that way.
And they haven't been refrigerated, and they haven't been transported.
Yeah,
so they're
what
just,
a difference.
Yeah.
That baked in the sun, yummy.
They didn't have to be grown on the other side of the world and brought over on a boat.
Will we ever get back to simplicity?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think there is something to be said for food being produced in other areas, because you would never be exposed to mangoes if
that's right.
You know, because we just don't have the climate.
And we have tons of avocados here in New York. And when I grew up, nobody knew what they were.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I'm not against it, but definitely, I mean, the closer to the earth you get when you eat, the more wonderful that food's going to be. That's why Europe has such great food, because it's all local.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It was grown right there. You know, they have artichokes in Italy. They have, you know,
Yeah, but there, well, I don't know about all of Europe, but I certainly know in France that the farmers keep fighting to keep a certain amount of rights and to protect what they're doing. And as a result, they have farmers all around the country Whereas more and more in the United States,
it's agribusiness.
It's agribusiness, and some of the really prized farmland has become the suburbs with lots of homes. And, we haven't... It's harder for access to locally grown fresh fruit because of all the small farmers we've put out of business and continue
to put out of business. It's not so much the sprawl. You know, that's part of it, but it's really the agri didn't just stand for agriculture, it stands for aggression. I mean, they've been aggressively running farmers out of business, taking over and deciding what we'll eat and what the quality will be. And not really deciding from the standpoint of what's wise, but what will result in the greatest profit.
Aggressive is really a good word.
It is. It's aggressive. They have been. I mean, you think about companies like Monsanto that have been just pillaging. I mean, it's
some of the stories have been really heartbreaking. The farmers
truly,
that they have really bullied about using their patented seeds that grow genetically modified food, and some farmers don't want to grow their food or use their seeds, but they blow over to their fields and get pollinated, and then the Monsanto lawyers come around and say you're using Monsanto products, and they put you out of business. And somehow the courts
and let's not forget the
keep
suicide
deciding
gene.
In their favor. The suicide gene. Oh.
You know about that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You have to buy them from them every year because the plants themselves are sterile.
This is something that's really scary to me. And we see it in a watermelon, for example. What's wrong with a watermelon seed? And why are we making watermelon that with the goal of making them seedless?
Because Americans are spoiled brats. They don't want to have to spit the seed out. They don't want to have to fight with their food. And I agree. I mean, you don't want to be struggling with your food. You want to enjoy it. But there's something, you know, you can get around it. You know, you can cut it up and put it on a plate if that's what you want to do and pick the seeds out.
Yeah.
But there's something rather enjoyable about sitting on a porch and munching on a big piece of watermelon and spitting the seeds off the porch.
The seeds, absolutely.
Yeah. Come on, get over it, guys.
I know. And orange juice without the pulp and without the seeds. I like food in its most natural form, enjoying its pluses and its minuses.
Yeah,
I do like
refined food, which a lot of times involves a lot of straining, but that should be really when you're going all out for some special occasion. It shouldn't be like it has to be that way every time or you can't enjoy it. It's like I've run across people in my work, you know, millionaires, who have gotten used to, I don't know, 50,000 thread count sheets or whatever it is.
Yeah, right.
And they literally cannot sleep on other sheets.
Oh, gosh.
When they travel, they have to take their own sheets because the hotels, you know, the five-star hotel doesn't have that, you know. It's insane.
They're like the princess and the pea. They can feel every little bump.
The princess and the manufactured pea. They didn't have this when they were young.
That's right.
They didn't have this. They made themselves used to it. And now, I don't know if it's affected or genuine, but they cannot sleep without it. They cannot live without this and that and the other thing. And it's one thing to really like quality, but it's another thing to be dominated by it.
Okay, that's our last note, Alan.
Me and my opinion.
Thank you. No, that was great. So if you're interested in Alan Rodinger and his recipes and his wonderful books, please visit his website, alanrodinger.com. I'm going to spell that. That's ALANROTINGER.com. Alan, thanks so much.
And give me your feedback. You can contact me.
All right. Go to his website and give him some feedback. Okay. Thanks, Alan. It's been fun.
Thanks, Karen.
We'll talk soon.
I hope so.
I'm Karen Hartglass. I'm your host today for It's All About Food. Have a great, delicious, healthy week. Thank you. Bye-bye.